You're listening to Called to Homeschool, episode number 72, Teaching Your Children About Liberty.
This is your manual to becoming the amazing homeschool mom you were called to be.
Okay, friends, this is a very special podcast episode. We have another great guest. I'm interviewing Connor Boyack today. Connor, why don't you introduce yourself and kind of tell listeners who you are?
Sure. Thanks for having me on. So my name's Connor. I grew up in San Diego. I now live in Utah. Very different climates, but I've gotten used to it. I'm what I call a full-time freedom fighter. So I run a political think tank. Where we work on legal reform and trying to change hearts, minds, and laws in favor of freedom. And over the years, written a bunch of books, but I'm a husband and a dad to two homeschool kids. I am a product of public school, so I've had to overcome, you know, all that, all those problems that were instilled in me from a younger age. But just having a lot of fun, and especially right now where a lot of families are looking to homeschool, trying to help a lot of families kind of learn the ropes and figure out that they can do it too.
That's awesome. So I found Connor years ago with one of his books, and then I've had the pleasure of meeting his wife and kids through different homeschool functions. And so I'm really excited to have him because Connor's my pretend Instagram friend. So
we all have those.
Met. Yeah. We've met in person before this too. So this is just icing on the cake. So what made you and your wife decide to homeschool? What kind of took you guys down that path?
So I wanted to homeschool before my wife did. I came across before we were married or right around when we were getting married, I came across a book by John Taylor Gatto called Dumbing Us Down. And for those who don't know Gatto, he was a 30-year high school public school teacher in New York, award-winning. He was the New York City Teacher of the Year. He was the New York State Teacher of the Year. And in the very same year when he won Teacher of the Year in New York, he wrote an op-ed, I believe it was in the Wall Street Journal, titled I Quit, I Think, in which he goes on to describe the harms that public schooling causes children, that he, despite trying to work within the system and fix things, he no longer wanted to be part of it because he felt it was a net negative. And so he quit his profession, started writing books, kind of an expose of a lot of the challenges that he saw in public schooling, and went on kind of the speaker circuit or across the country talking about it. So I read his book, Dumbing Us Down, which articulates several of the problems from his perspective of public schooling. They resonated very deeply with me and my experience of public schooling. To this day, my mom apologizes for not homeschooling me. She's like, it wasn't a thing back then. I didn't know about it. It was never really something we were aware of. And so when I got married, of course, you know, it takes two to tango, especially, you know, typically the wife, mom is kind of shouldering a lot of that burden. And what really did it for my wife was our son, our firstborn, was very kind of intellectually advanced for his age, but not emotionally advanced at all. And so we kind of got placed in a pickle where even if we wanted to put him in school, even like a private school, he would have been bored in class, so we could have accelerated him, but then he would not be kind of emotionally and socially at the same level of his peers. And so that disconnect, I think, led my wife initially to have to grapple with, okay, we now have to figure out how to do something on our own. Over time, I think she's very much become aligned with kind of those broader philosophical and ideological concerns, but it was almost kind of a pragmatic issue that forced her into really considering shouldering the burden of educating our kids herself.
That's interesting because we've actually done a podcast episode about if your husband's not on board. And I didn't even think about like if your husband was like, I really think you should do it. Because like you're saying, you're like, hey, I think you should homeschool right. Our children while I go every day. So how did like, I'm just curious of the process of how you kind of like, was it mostly that or were you like, I'm going to help you? How did you kind of get her to be more on board with details?
I think she started kind of going around to different schools and meeting and like, hey, what are our options? And initially it was kind of like, all right, well, we've kind of got to forge our own path here. And she's more, so to your question, not only is it like homeschooling, yes or no, it's also then, you know, what kind of homeschooling, because as you well know, there's just this broad spectrum within which you can call things homeschooling. And I am much more the kind of laissez-faire, unschooling, live through life kind of person, whereas she gravitates more to the curriculum. She's a big fan of The Good and the Beautiful. And so we've kind of had to blend that. And of course, I don't have as much of a say because I'm not there all day long. And so the kids do get kind of that curriculum structure. But finding that balance is part of the beauty of marriage and family and kind of figuring out what works best for our children. And, you know, I've been, of course, very deferential because I'm just glad that they're homeschooled, period. And, you know, that my wife's willing to kind of shoulder that burden and help the kids directly at home. So it is kind of a part of it was like waiting for our kids to get of a certain age where we could kind of figure out their learning styles and what worked best as kind of a whole family culture. And everything. And so it's kind of been, you know, refining it over time. We're part of a co-op, which has been super helpful just to have kind of the social connections and a lot of other classes. Our kids take classes on like outschool.com. And so we do get kind of the smorgasbord, you know, a la carte learning as well, which I'm more of a fan of. And so it's really just kind of that experimentation process over time that, like most homeschooling families, we've just kind of organically gone through to figure out what works best.
Yeah. And so how many years have you guys been homeschooling then?
So our oldest is 11 and we've homeschooled since the beginning.
Okay.
And so, you know, do your math, I guess.
I don't know. school or any of those things.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. I don't know when the official started.
Yeah. You are always homeschooling. You just didn't officially call it that, right?
Right.
That's awesome. So you have a book. I read it. I don't know how many years ago it came out, but I was actually one of your Amazon review readers of Passion Driven Education. So tell us a little bit more about that book.
So this got started because I was going around speaking at some of the homeschool conferences. This became one of kind of my more repeated or used presentations that I would give. And it was all about how we authentically learn and retain information the best when it's something we desire to learn. And this is like brain dead, simple, obvious truism. And yet the modern schooling system has a fundamental disconnect with that truism. So in this presentation, which then became the book, I would just share my story about how, you know, I now work in areas of inquiry or fields of study that I hated in school. I mean, I've written at the time of this recording, I think 21 books, and I did horribly in English in school. I couldn't stand it at all. I work in my kind of legal profession and so forth with like history and economics, and I hated those classes, you know, because you sit down in textbook, you know, memorize dates, pump and dump, test is over, you know, I've regurgitated it, let me get out of my brain. It was not enjoyable until for me, I finally graduated college and I found myself not only with enough time and mental, you know, energy and availability to focus on things that I really wanted to learn, but also then I did develop kind of this this interest in American history. So I just started reading books on my own, which just, you know, spidered into all kinds of other books and tangential topics like economics. And so as I talk about in the book, for me, I finally started understanding and retaining and applying this information. And as I became a father, I was terrified because I did not want my child and now children to have to suffer through that whole process and have society kind of imprint on them what is expected of them at a certain age and so forth. And only later would they then have the freedom to discover who they are and what they're interested in. And so passion-driven education is just a nickname for the model that I think we all learn best in. And that is when we have an interest in something, let's say for my son, it's Pokemon. When I, you know, assign him a little persuasive essay topic on Pokemon, it is a joy for him to write that essay, right? When I, you know, we do clay modeling or let's learn 3D modeling or let's learn about the business operations behind the company that does Pokemon. All these things for him are helping him understand a world that he's already interested in and using a language that he already speaks. When we sit kids down and we're like, let's learn calculus and let's learn world history and let's learn Spanish, you know, all these things are just different languages that they have to learn a new language to then learn the content of that language. They have to learn the language of physics to then learn physics. Instead, when we talk to them in a language that they already speak, maybe it's My Little Pony, maybe it's Angry Birds, maybe it's horses, right? When we talk to them about those things they know and then add on almost as appendages, the reading, writing, arithmetic. I mean, I remember when I started, I was teaching my son algebra when he was, I think, 7. And instead of variables like X and Y and so forth, we were using acronyms of Angry Birds because that was the hot thing for him. And so I substituted them all out. And simply because of the Angry Birds connection, he was willing to sit there and let me teach him, and he would learn and retain algebra equations. And it was amazing. So really, it's me trying to find a way to help parents say, rather than taking this off-the-shelf curriculum or these standards from some committee at some school board and saying, here's what your child needs to learn and here's the way that they'll be taught, it's a more authentic way to say, use what the language your children are already speaking and then meet them where they are and build kind of a curriculum around their own interests. It's something I think that, you know, increases satisfaction, retention, mental health, and just a lot more enjoyment for the homeschoolers who figure out that when we latch onto what kids are naturally curious about and interested in, the learning doesn't even become a chore, it becomes a joy.
Yeah. I think after so many years, you kind of head down that path too, because you don't want to be fighting your kid the whole time. And yeah. So but before I do my school in terms, right? So before the term starts, I always ask them, what do you want to learn about? What do you care to study? And it's been, or even taking, I have one son who's into music. So we did Beethoven, but then we found it where people had made a disco version of classical music. So seeing how you can take something he loved, music, and seeing how people have used it throughout the years, not just
cool.
Like, here's a dead composer and here's right. Facts about him, right? So yeah, I think I love that because that's kind of what we do too a little bit. I think I do it in a different way because I do like a little bit more of the structure. Mm-hmm. But I think turning it over to your kids is the only way to really have success and for them to retain the information.
I share in the book a story of a girl named Erica Goldson. She was a valedictorian of her school in New York. I think this was in 2010. And she gets up to give her valedictorian speech at graduation. Here she is, kind of the grade A product of the industrialized schooling process. She's applied herself and risen to the top. And this is like the essence of what public schooling should produce. She gets up on stage. She's, of course, in front of all of her peers and their parents. Behind her, the principal, teachers, school administrators. And she proceeds to throw an total grenade. You can find the speech online. If you just search Erica Goldson valedictorian, you'll find it. But she basically says, hey, I'm the product of public schooling and I'm terrified because while my peers were doodling in class to become artists, right, or tapping on their desks and daydreaming about lyrics to then go become musicians or playing games on their phone to become video game developers or whatever, I saw, she says something to the effect of, I saw every assignment as an end unto itself. I was the perfect student, but now I'm terrified because I have no clue what I want to do with my life. And so it speaks a little bit to this passion or interest-based connection to learning, where if we suppress what children are naturally interested in and force upon them a total off-the-shelf solution that doesn't at least somewhat cater to what their individual interests are, we run the risk, as was the case for me personally, in suppressing the child's own interests and basically making them wait for years and years and years until later on when you have the freedom and the time and so forth to be able to cultivate those things. And so I think, like we said earlier, homeschooling is very much a spectrum. You can do all kinds of things within it. But on the extreme, you know, kind of the public schooling conveyor belt process, you know, you shall learn this at this time and, you know, we're going to test you. I think there's a lot of dangers there that parents need to shy away from.
Yeah, definitely. So how involved are you with your homeschool? Just more like opinions, like, hey, I think we should do this, or are you more involved like with their actual learning?
So the thing I loved about the co-op is that, you know, in our co-op, the parents teach the classes. And so I've taught a number of classes at our co-op over the years. With my kids being younger, that's been more my wife. But as they've started getting older, I've become more involved. So for example, lately, they have weekly assignments to do a persuasive essay. They can pick whatever topic they want, again, kind of connecting it to their interests. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, my son, yeah, he did a Pokemon one, and my daughter did a cats and dogs one, or, you know, why cats are better than dogs. And like, I was like, I don't care what the topic is, just find something you want to argue about, make three arguments, and let's kind of talk about what that looks like. And so more and more I'm getting involved as kind of they're getting a little bit more advanced, doing kind of the out-school classes. And of course, with the Tuttle twins that we'll talk about in a bit, talking a lot about kind of history and economics at a younger level as well. So it's something I'm excited about now that they're maturing a bit and ready to tackle some of those bigger ideas. That's where I feel I more come in, where my wife has wanted to give them more kind of the structure and the foundation to allow them to then go, you know, pursue what they're interested in. So to be fair, you know, my wife does most of the work with kind of the Good and the Beautiful basic stuff. They do the co-op, but then we're starting to add on some of these additional kind of subjects and things where I'm stepping in a little bit more to do some more as well.
That's awesome. That's way fun. I always, my husband's undergrad's linguistics. So I've always wanted him to do languages.
Yeah. But
it's more just at scripture time we get like, did you know? And they're like, we know.
Yeah. You told us four times.
Yeah. He learned Hebrew as part of his undergrad. And so he does a lot of Hebrew traditions and like, this is a chiasmus. And they're like, we know what a chiasmus is. So it's awesome that you can help where you can help, right?
What I'm excited about too, as my kids get older, is I want to do a lot of like apprenticeships or job shadowing. I think there's a lot of power in a young age at getting a lot of exposure to what the world has to offer. I mean, just even like, hey, if you're thinking about being an accountant, I know a guy down the street, let's, you know, go hang out with him for a day and go to his job and see what that's like, just to start to get a lot of exposure at an early age to the different types of professions that are out there. I didn't have this at all. So I remember sitting down with like the, what are they called? Like the college career advisement person, whatever. And like, what track do you want to go on? What do you want to major? I'm like, I have no idea, you know? And had I been kind of exposed to a lot of that, I think that would have been very helpful for me to start to figure out where I wanted to specialize and focus. And so that's something in the next few years. Again, my oldest is only 11, but as they get kind of 14, 15, I'm really excited because I want to really expose them to a wide range of things so that they can start to think like, yes, no, and drill down more into what they're interested in. I think that would be a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, it's funny you said that. We had in one of our co-op classes, we had the dads come in each week and kind of talk about what they do. And one dad was an entrepreneur and he talked about that, like, here's a buffet and people are saying, don't actually try any of them, but tell me which one's your favorite and what do you want to do for the rest of your life?
Right.
And so he goes, like, wouldn't it be better to like try the apples? Like, ooh, I like apples, or I don't like apples. So it's that same idea, but I like that, to being able to expose your kids. Like, I really love animals. Then you go try shadowing a vet and you're like, this is disgusting.
Totally.
I don't want to do it. So I love that idea.
Or even like mini internships, like, hey, I'll work for free for a month for you doing whatever you want. But then you're kind of in there seeing more of the day to day, you know, doing some of the grunt work. But I remember when I was 15, I got my first job as doing like secretary clerical stuff for a mediator. So like an attorney who kind of mediates disputes. And my mom's an attorney, and you know, whatever notions I had of being an attorney were quickly stomped out in that job I had. But that was good for me because I could kind of get that out of the way and just see like, this doesn't really suit my personality. So I can, you know, set that aside and not, like many people do, say, okay, I'll go to law school, get $200,000 in school debt, and later decide that I don't want to do this anymore. That just seems so harmful.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think you should create that program and try it out on my kids.
All right, sounds good.
I have enough of them. Let's see. Okay, let's talk about Tuttle Twins. This is, when did Tuttle Twins come out? How long ago was the first book released?
First one was 2014, so it's been about 6 years.
And was the first one The Law?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I remember, I think we bought it in a big group buy with our co-op. We had just heard about it. We all thought it was amazing. So kind of tell people, what are the Tuttle Twins and what inspired you to start writing them?
So as I said, I kind of run this organization, and when my kids were young, I would, you know, come home and, hey, what did you do today? And they would, you know, sometimes ask me, and over time I was like, how do I talk to my kids about what it is I do, right? Like property rights and justice and free markets and like working on all these legal things. And so like any, you know, parent, I went on Amazon, children's book that talks about property rights, and there was nothing. I mean, there's like sex ed, right? You want to talk birds and the bees, you can find like 80 books that kind of help you have those conversations and frame it in a way that kids can understand. But I couldn't really find anything like that for these kind of political, economic freedom ideas. And after being bummed for a little bit, I started to say like, hey, you idiot, you talk about entrepreneurship all the time. Like, here's an opportunity. And so a buddy of mine, Elijah, as the illustrator, he also had younger kids, still does. And so we teamed up on this first book, which was just kind of like a little side project that we both wanted to do. There were no pretenses that this would be, you know, a series or a business or a content empire that it's becoming or anything like that. But the response was amazing. And so that very quickly was a market signal to us that we should continue. The premise is for the Tuttle Twins series that each of the children's books is based on a classic, you know, free market or freedom-based book or essay where we kind of distill the important ideas down to a young child's level, wrap it in a fun story, beautifully illustrated, and suddenly the kids are learning about all kinds of economic, civic, historical type principles when they often don't even realize it. They're just reading kind of a fun little story and seeing all the illustrations. So the books, I mean, we've now sold over 1 million copies. We were translating them into a dozen languages. We've got now books for teens and curriculum, and we're starting to work on a cartoon and all these kinds of things. But what's amazing for me is we get messages literally every day, at least like 6 to 10 messages on social media or an email from parents so thrilled about the conversations they're able to now have with their kids about these more complex ideas where before the parents would not have been able to find kind of an authentic way to bring it up or a way that would interest their children. And we get stories all the time like, oh man, I was in the grocery store and they saw like, you know, 8 kinds of potato chips and said spontaneous order, you know, or like, you know, we were talking about when the cost of, you know, chewing gum when I was growing up and they said, ah, that's the creature from Jekyll Island striking again, it's inflation. And so just the pattern recognition that a lot of these kids are starting to have about applying the ideas they're learning and really understanding the way the world works. It's so fun. It's like a dopamine drip. Like every day I'm getting these messages from parents of like praise, like, oh my gosh, it's so amazing. We're having a lot of fun with the books. And that is so like, that's motivation for me to really continue just because we're seeing such a profound success with the book series. So we're just having a ton of fun doing it.
That's awesome. And I don't remember who said it, but if you can't take a complex subject and explain it to a child, then you don't understand it very well. Hmm. And I don't like it's Einstein or some brilliant person, right? And I love that you have taken these complex books like Creature from Jekyll Island and put it in a book so easy to digest. And so a lot of these concepts were new to me as well when I was reading them. And I was like, oh, yeah, I totally knew this, guys, but I was learning it right there with them. For at sure. The same time. And so, but I love too, it inspired one of my kids to go read the real book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. And who's, he got Robert Murphy's economics books. Like, I can't remember what the name of them, but it inspired him to like really dive in and go deeper with it. So
that's a very common reaction too, is not only do we see that a lot from the kids, but I'll tell you easily half, probably over 2/3 of the parents that get our books are themselves not familiar with the principles that we're talking about. And so, you know, yeah, those parents could pick up like economics in one lesson and it's like 200 pages, but it's written in the 50s. It uses a more complex English, you know, let's be honest, most adults aren't going to take the time or show the interest to go read that source material. But when you give them an opportunity to read alongside their kids at a simplified level that still conveys those complex ideas, suddenly they're latching onto it. They're learning and they're, we get messages of time from parents like, I never learned that stuff in school at all. That was amazing. So it's just a ton of fun to kind of fill a void like that, that no one, I guess, had ever thought to like really start doing this. And we just, I honestly feel like this like obligation or, well, yeah, I guess obligation or duty to like accelerate, because especially right now with so many more families homeschooling with the state of the world that it's in and authoritarianism, and a lot of families are really worried about, you know, government, its power to shut down businesses and churches. And so there's a lot of angst, I think, right now, especially among the newly homeschooling crowd who is a bit more independent minded and concerned with you know, the economic impact and all the money they're flooding into the economy and what the effect is going to be in the next few years and so forth. And so I feel like this hastening, if you will, right, of like having to produce a ton of content because these parents are just eager to have more and more to talk to their kids about these ideas and figure out how to understand what's going on so that they're in a better position to be able to act and not be acted upon.
That's awesome. So I was curious, which one of your Tuttle Twins books is your favorite?
So I get asked this question a lot, and I think my answer varies every time.
Okay,
So today, my favorite, and actually the one I answered with last time I was asked this, is probably The Tuttle Twins and the Fate of the Future.
Okay.
We wrote this one last year, and it's based on, now I'm forgetting, Murray Rothbard's Anatomy of the State.
Okay.
But it's basically all about persuasion versus coercion. Right now, we're seeing riots and oppression and all this kind of stuff, people trying to get their way and bullying other people into submission. And so coercion is kind of the way typically that through government, people enforce their will upon other people. And it's almost like this contest of power. And whoever can wrest power from the other side can then dominate the other side and force them to do what they want. And so the fate of the future is like, look, our future depends on us figuring out how to get away from this coercion model and acting more from a point of persuasion and trying to help others see the virtue of our ideas, help them to understand the way we think and come to agree with us. And there's going to be more social harmony and happiness when we get away from this notion of just beating people up, you know, physically or figuratively as well, economically perhaps. So that was a fun book just because I think the stakes are so high with the way the status quo really is and the way government operates. And if we really want to create a better future and not land in some kind of dystopian 1984 world that seems to draw nigh with ever increasing speed, these are like fundamental questions we at least need to be thinking about, if not trying to figure out solutions. And so it's just kind of a child-friendly way of introducing this topic to kids and starting to think about how can we build a better world? What are the challenges that we need to respond to? And what are some of those solutions that we might be able to brainstorm?
How do you answer people who I've seen on your social media platform or will people will attack and be saying, this is indoctrinating children, this is awful, this is evil? What are your responses to that?
Those people, few in number though they may be, probably always, in my experience, say the same thing about parents who read the Bible with their kids.
Okay.
You can't make an argument against teaching economic or civic principles and not have the same argument apply to religious principles as well. Indoctrination or propaganda, these have negative associations with the words. But to propagate something is simply to convey information, and better the parent have the primary role of teaching their children what they perceive to be truth than their peers being able to say, oh, well, no, that's nice you had a kid, but we get to tell your kid what's right, and you just brought them into existence. Now it's our opportunity to indoctrinate them. Look, someone is going to captivate the mind of the child. Someone is going to introduce a worldview and a perspective to that child. Better the parent than anyone else, even if, you know, you and I might disagree with what they're teaching, that is the proper source of authority. And so, no, we are not indoctrinating or propagandizing. What we are doing is empowering parents to have conversations with their children about ideas they already believe in. Very, very few of our customers are people who disagree with us and then are propagandized into believing our point of view. Typically, these are parents who already have a more conservative, libertarian, classical, liberal, free market type of perspective. And they want help in transmitting those ideas to their kids and helping their kids understand that perspective. They'd be talking about these things at some point with their children anyways. But I'll tell you from my experience, we have a lot of parents who are very frustrated that their older children, perhaps that they're kind of beyond the age of our kind of audience of Tuttle Twins, that they've been indoctrinated into a very left-leaning social justice warrior Marxist point of view. And these parents lament the fact, almost as if it's like a Christian parent whose son is now atheist, something like that, right? Like mm-hmm. They've kind of gone astray from the truth, so to speak. And so what we're doing is simply providing resources so parents can, at a younger age even, talk to their children about these ideas, providing them a foundation so that as those kids are exposed to all kinds of alternative and I would say incorrect ideas later on in life, the children are equipped to be able to weigh those arguments and not just absorb them like a sponge and not question them at all.
Yeah, I think that's powerful to teach children to question everything, right? Like,
for sure.
Find truth on your own.
Yeah.
So I feel like economics, government, history all start tying into one. Yes, no. I don't think you can really do one without the other.
I agree.
So what do you think would, if like you could only teach one thing to your children right now, what would you be like, this is like the foundation of what you need to teach your children?
Let me clarify your question. So do you mean like a particular book, or are you just saying like a concept?
A concept.
So to me, the foundation of social harmony, economic equality, individual rights, and everything, as you say, is kind of all wrapped up in one, and I agree, really boils down to the basic teaching of morality that any good parent teaches their kids. And this is what I find funny about what I do now with the Tuttle twins is we're not necessarily teaching new things to children. We're simply giving voice to something that parents are already teaching. Here's what I mean by that. Any good parent is already teaching their children, hey, don't hurt other people and don't take their stuff, right? That is like parenting 101. And it's only later in life that we as adults are kind of indoctrinated perhaps into adding asterisks and exceptions to those basic rules of good behavior. Don't steal from other people. Oh, but if 51% of people think it's okay, then you can go ahead and, you know, take as much as you want in taxes, for example, right? Or, you know, don't hurt other people, but if they're growing a plant in their basement that you don't like, then you're welcome to go, you know, lock them in a cage, shoot their dog, maybe shoot, you know, someone else. And like, these are crazy things. And yet over time, we as adults have become acclimatized to putting those exceptions on these basic rules of civil society, which are very kind of laissez-faire libertarian. Don't hurt other people. Don't take their stuff. Live and let live. You do you. I'll do me. As long as we're not hurting one another, then that's how we all get along. And so that is the basic concept that I try and instill in my children, because it has its outgrowth in free markets, right? Like, we shouldn't have regulations, which is you're basically stealing from businesses or taxing them and so forth. And so we can talk about economics with this foundation of don't take from other people. We can talk about, you know, politics and the proper role of government on the basis of don't hurt other people, because at the end of the day, every law that is passed is backed up with a gun. We're seeing that today with, you know, what was George Floyd and a counterfeit $20 bill leading to, you know, fatality, which has exploded with riots and all these kinds of things, I think, boil down to those basic fundamental ideas. And so, especially with kids, you have to really boil it down to its essence and help them understand those basics. So that would be the concept that I really try and instill in my children, because I do believe that it has so broad of an application to all of these other ideas that we can then relate back to that foundational principle. Don't hurt other people. Don't take their stuff.
That's awesome. There's the author, Richard Mayberry, and he always says, don't encroach upon other people and do all that you have agreed to do.
Absolutely.
And I really like those two perspectives of like, yeah, if you don't, I don't mess with you, you don't mess with me, but I've agreed to do something. So yeah.
My word. Yep. I like that. Yeah. His books are awesome. The Uncle Eric books are great.
Yeah, they're really good one too. So what age are your books written for?
So our children's books are more for ages like 5 to 11, although, you know, we get younger kids who like the illustrations and they'll like listen while an older sibling or a parent reads. And so they're still getting the material. And oddly, we found a lot of teenagers who, you know, it's beneath them in terms of like the format of the book. It's a kid's book. But for a lot of these older kids, they've just like the parents, they've never been exposed to these ideas. And so we end up having a very broad age that we apply to. We do now have some books for teenagers as well that follow kind of the choose your own adventure model.
Okay.
And so those came out late last year. And then probably early next year, we're coming out with some toddler board books as well. So like the ABCs of free markets, where every letter is kind of teaching a different ideas, different idea. So over time, with this hastening that I'm talking about, trying to keep rush and produce all kinds of content, we got several other books coming out in the next year. And the goal really is to almost become this like brand empire, so that parents, who want to teach their children the way the world works have a wide range of offerings depending on the age and particular interest of their child. We're going to be coming out with all kinds of other curriculum and stuff in the years ahead. And so really just a broad platform that parents can pick and choose from, or like many parents do, just get everything and then use it all.
And you have a new podcast cast out as well.
Tell
us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so that's called The Way the World Works. You can find it at TuttleTwins.com/podcast. And the goal there is to talk to the kids. But again, our secondary audience is the parents who love kind of the more simplified level. And so typically, you know, they're in the car going shopping or something like that. They're little 15-minute episodes on average. And so just in a commute or something like that, they can be listening together. But like the title is, we're trying to help kids and their parents understand the way the world works. So we're talking about current events and economic ideas and really just trying to use that foundational learning that the books provide and then apply it to kind of the world around us to better understand, you know, why is that happening this way? And what do these riots mean? And what does the Constitution say about this? And just kind of the broader overview about the world within the context of the ideas that we're talking about.
That's awesome. Okay, so where would people go to find out more, where they could buy books and all that good stuff?
So easiest place is just at TuttleTwins.com. If you go to TuttleTwins.com/products, you'll see the full list of what we have. We've got a family card game, we've got an economic curriculum and all kinds of other stuff. If you want to reach out to us, there's a contact page there. We get a lot of great ideas, I think, from folks who are always suggesting other books and material that we can do. And so TuttleTwins.com is where it's at.
Awesome. Connor, thank you so much for taking the time to explain this and to maybe inspire some more freedom fighters on their way.
Yeah, hopefully. I'm very excited to think 20, 30 years down from, you know, the road of us doing all this, what the effect is going to be from all these kids learning these ideas at a very young age. So it's a very exciting idea that I think about. And just appreciate being able to spread the word on your podcast and elsewhere to help even more kids learn about this stuff.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Called to Homeschool. Be sure to subscribe and we'd love to hear your comments or questions. You can find all our show notes on calledtohome.com.